ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Peace Talk, one of a series of Monday evening programs on KTOO called Focus on Community. Peace Talk on every third Monday and sometimes the second Monday is sponsored by Veterans for Peace, the local chapter. It's our way of discussing issues of importance to our community, our country, and our national, international community. So we would like to thank you for tuning in. And to say a couple of words about this evening's program, I should point out that we did an interview on Friday morning with a gentleman named Elliot Abrams. Elliot is, as you will hear, a dedicated member of the pro-peace community. And the topic of our discussion this evening is Guantanamo base and the imperative of closing that base and trying to clear away the bureaucratic and political impediments to doing so. I'm very pleased this evening to have the opportunity to bring this program. Elliot is currently running up and down the West Coast, even though he's from the East Coast. He is very busy, engaged in public discussions of this issue. Before we get to the interview, though, I would like to play a song called Guantanamo, as performed by Juno's own Katie Henry. Guantanamo by Katie Henry, which is a fitting introduction to the next segment of the program. As I mentioned earlier, we caught up with Elliot Abrams on Friday morning, and the redoubtable Jeff Brown assisted with teching an interview with Elliot. And Now, with the assistance of John and Dolly Kramers, we're going to put it on the air. It pretty much speaks for itself, so I will ask you to just sit back and listen for about 35 or 40 minutes to the interview, and then we'll continue the program by playing music on the way out. So here is an interview recorded on Friday morning, the 15th, with Elliot Abrams, who is our guest on this evening's program. Let's go. Good evening and welcome to our guest on this evening's Peace Talk. Our guest name is Elliot Adams. Elliot has a distinguished career of involvement with Veterans for Peace. He is an Army veteran, paratrooper, served in Vietnam, Japan, Korea, and Alaska at one point. Elliot transformed himself into a nonviolent wager of peace, and in that capacity he has been an inspiration to hundreds of veterans who have joined our group. Most recently, Elliot has engaged in a hunger strike in solidarity with the prisoners at Guantanamo prison camp in Cuba, as well as with the Pelican Bay hunger strikers. Pelican Bay is a California maximum security facility near Crescent City. He is currently on a West Coast tour, and he makes a strong case from multiple perspectives as to why it is imperative that we close Gitmo, as it's known, as soon as possible. So, Elliot, what did I forget?
Not much. You may mention that I also have like 15 years in elected public office, which included like president of the school board and mayor for a couple of terms and things of that sort.
Okay, well, you're a genuine star. I was aware of the elected office thing, and I think that was great. That'd make a whole interesting discussion as well, whether your involvement in this organization has created electoral problems, but it sounds like it didn't.
Well, actually, after those years in elected public office, I recognized that that was a process which, while I enjoyed making government work for people, I recognized that that was not the way that we could create real change. So we could make minor adjustments to the system as a politician, but real change has to come from the people, and that's when I changed from being a politician to being an activist.
Well, you've certainly got a good track record going for you. So let's talk about your current tour. You're on the West Coast, and you are speaking to various groups about the imperative of closing the Guantanamo prison camp in Cuba. And we are certainly sympathetic with that goal. But what is the main gist of your argument?
Well, first and foremost, I believe that as an activist, I believe in social movements. I believe that we, the people, have the power if we will exercise the power. And indeed, the reason why we've gotten to where we have from, say, where we were in the 60s or 70s is because we, the people, have ceased to be actively involved in our government and have sort of sat back and let the politicians run things, and they ran them the way they liked to. So a lot of what I'm talking about is the fact that we can close Gitmo, but it's going to be us that close Gitmo, not the government. We can't beg the politicians to close. It's probably not going to work. So we're about motivating people to use the power they have to close Gitmo. So the first thing I always ask people is if they believe they can close Gitmo. And that comes to the idea of who has the power in the country. And ultimately, the power is with the people. We have that old image of the sort of model of power, what they call a power pyramid, where you have like the president at the top and all the power flows down to the people, which in reality is wrong, because the truth of the matter is the people have all the power, and it flows down to, like, the president. And that's a model which, while that's real, is hard for people to take on sometimes, because every time they face a hierarchy since they were in kindergarten, they have always told the people that the hierarchy has the power, and they've done everything to convince you you don't have the power. But I would counter that with everything of value we care about in this country, whether it be the woman's suffrage, whether it be desegregation, whether it be the right to form unions, the 8-hour work day, whether it be, it just goes on and on. All those things we care about in this country, we got by people standing up and demanding that the government be changed and be responsive to the people. So we have the power. And the next stage is, do we want to use it? Do we want to close GIPR? And do we want to, you know, what are the arguments we use? If our goal is, as I believe it is, to build a social movement, let me back up one step and say, you know, I've been in Washington looking at this thing, and I am convinced that the only reason Gitmo is not closed, is because some politicians believe they can make political hay out of keeping it open, talking fear to their constituents, and getting your constituents to believe that it should be kept open. And that what we the people can do is change that political foundation. We can change the terrain they're working on. If we change it so the majority of the American public want Gitmo shut, not only think it's bad, but want it shut, then they will do it. They'll be responsive to our needs. And key amongst that is a couple of things. First of all, the biggest indicator of the success of a social movement is the percentage of the public who supports the idea. So we know that in order to build this movement, we've got to bring more and more people in. Second biggest indicator of the success of the social movement is how that majority cuts across demographic lines. So we know we got to bring more and more people in. We know that we have to bring people in who are on the left, the right, Republicans, Democrats, blue collar, white collar, Christians, Muslims, Jews. You know, we got to bring them in from all sides. So that sort of sets our tone. The other thing we know in building the social movement is that we have to do, it's a very critical thing here. Not only do we have to convince people that what's happening is bad, we have to convince them to support the alternative. So during the war in Iraq, just to show you the problem that comes up, during the war in Iraq, we the peace movement quite quickly got the majority of the public to believe that the war in Iraq was bad, we shouldn't have gone in, and it's being badly run. And we in the peace movement kept saying the war is bad, we shouldn't have gone in the first place, it's badly run. The administration, on the other hand, was not arguing whether the situation is bad, they were arguing that we ought to stay in. So they were arguing, oh yeah, okay, so we probably shouldn't have gone in. But on the other hand, if we get out too quickly, we will empower the enemy. If we get out too quickly, we will create the civil war will erupt. If we get out too quickly, we will not honor the people who already died because we should have stayed till a victory. So they were doing exactly that distinction between supporting the alternative policies versus just thinking the problem's wrong. So that tells us the third key piece we have to do to build a social movement, which is we have to be talking about why we are better off out of Guantanamo than we are in Guantanamo. And that comes down to a series of arguments. So we hear the arguments. We hear the arguments. Here's an amazing argument I've heard a number of times is, well, let me back up and say one thing more. You have to understand that over half, 86 of 166 is now 164, but anyway, of the people have been cleared by the government for release. five branches of the government, five departments of the government, looked at each case individually and said, we're never going to file charges against these people. There's no charges to be filed. And in addition, if they are released, they will be no threat to national security. Yet that happened over a year ago. And most of them have been cleared two or three times before that. So, I've heard people say, well, yeah, okay, they were innocent, but now that we've tortured them so long, we can't release them because they might become terrorists now that they're tortured, which is an amazing piece of logic. I would say to people, we need to do what we have always done in the past, which is we face our mistakes like a man and say, oops, we made a mistake. We're going to try to rectify the mistake as best we can, rather than say, oh, we're going to keep you locked up forever. The other thing I would say is that if you think the 86 who have been cleared for release would be a threat when they're released, I'm going to tell you, you're not seeing the forest for the trees. Because as long as you hold each one of those 86, there must be 10, 20, 30 people at home who are really ripped and really mad at us. And if you release the one, that will defuse that 10, 20, 30 people, and you only have potentially one person. So it just does not make sense to hold on to people who are innocent on the argument that they'll then become terrorists. And furthermore, I'll say another thing, too, which is that a lot would depend on how you release them. If you were to take them and just, for example, and say, oh, well, you know, we're going to release you and throw handcuffs on them and put a sandbag over their head and drop them off in the desert, cut their handcuffs and fly away, they're going to feel differently than if you go to them and say, look, we realize we made a mistake. We shouldn't have had you imprisoned. We shouldn't have tortured you. But we also recognize that because of the trauma you've been through, you're going to have PTSD, and we are going to pay for your therapy. And we also understand that we've taken you away from your home for 12 years, and we are going to help fund your this transition back into your family and your civilian life. And I feel very strongly that most of the people who have been in Gitmo are exhausted, they're tired, they're struggling with their own demons because they have been tortured. And if they were given that kind of a treatment, they would just be, thank God it's over and let's go on with my life as best I can. So, I think that would further diffuse the risk of any of those few, just the 80. So I think we've gone from having, let's say 10 per people, instead of having 800, gone down to 80. And of the 80, we probably made almost all of them, willing to say, geez, I just want to get on with my life. You know, this has been a terrible experience, and I want to return to my life. So I think that argument is something we can deal with. Not an important argument. I don't know if there are some particular arguments which you've heard, Bill, which you'd like to talk about.
I'd just like to explore a little bit the status. I recall fairly vividly on January 20th, 2009, one of the very first things that the newly sworn-in president, Barack Obama, stated and signed an executive order was to close Guantanamo within a year. And a number of us were quite exalted in that decision. And then I guess Congress threw up a bunch of roadblocks and the president sort of rethought it and forgot about it, or we don't seem to have made any progress toward that end in 5 years.
Well, I think you're right. We haven't made big progress. We have made some progress in the last few months. Actually, we've made some progress since I started my fast, but which was only a few months ago. Mm-hmm. But I think that the thing is important to understand is that this is about politics, that some politicians believe they can make political hay out of keeping it open. And that's where we come in, because if we change public opinion, that will eliminate that whole issue. you know, Obama and other presidents before him, like Roosevelt, said, okay, you elected me, but now you got to make me do what is right. And that's me building that political base. So if we build a solid political base, then that gives him, that eliminates all the hogwash that we're seeing, the political hogwash we're seeing, which is obstructing doing the right thing. It reminds me of a time when my father said to me, Elliot, there's no problem so simple facing this country today that five intelligent men can't make it too complicated to be solved. And that's what we're seeing. This is not complicated. It's not complicated if you eliminate the politics. But what makes it complicated is the politics, and people are making it complicated because they believe there's political hay to make. They believe that they can, you know, I don't know, I'm not in the back rooms, I'm not hearing in their brains, but enough to know the details, but I know the structure of it. I know it's that they feel that at the next election they can get political benefit by saying something to the effect of either, you know, we kept the president from putting the nation at risk because by releasing these people, or he went ahead and did the and violated the rules we set in place and released them anyway, and that's terrible, something along those lines. But if we build the political base, talking to our neighbors, talking to our friends, doing everything we can just to change public opinion, then we will find that it will not be complicated getting out of Guantanamo.
Yeah, we got a notice. Vets for Peace chapter contacts got a notice from National the other day saying that the time is now to contact our senators primarily, that the current version of the National Defense Authorization Act contains some language that gives the president a little bit more flexibility in trying to shut the place down. But they're expecting pretty debilitating amendments to show up when the bill shows up in the Senate. And we are all urged to contact, in our case, Senators Begich and Murkowski, to ask them to resist those amendments. Do you have any idea how that campaign is proceeding?
I do not, because I've been on the road now for a long time. But I will say this, in terms of talking to your senators, I think it's important to remember that calling once is not what we need to do. You know, I used to basically tell my secretary to stack up the pro letters, stack up the negative letters, and then I would walk over the tape measure and see which one was bigger and by how much. So I didn't read those letters. I couldn't possibly have. So I think it's important to understand when it comes to calling your congressmen and senators, there's no reason not to call them at least once a day. You can call them twice a day. Just keep calling back, and telling them who you are and telling them what you want. Same thing with writing letters. Just keep doing it. Because it amplifies your voice when you do that. And we forget that. Sometimes it's easy to think, well, I called them and I made a good argument, so that's bad. But I think it's good to just remember to keep on doing it.
Yeah, we don't have a very clear indication from either office as to where they stand on this issue. So I think your suggestion that we just keep on doing it is a good one.
And one reason, I can tell you from politics, the reason you don't have a clear indication where they're coming from is they haven't made up their mind. If they were convinced that everybody wanted it shut, they'd be out there proclaiming it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm quite sure where to put their political power at this point.
Yeah, well, interesting. We've got one Democrat running for re-election in what is clearly a red state, and we have a Republican who is considered a Republican in name only by some of the people on the right. So they're always walking a fairly delicate line. But we'll keep that in mind about continuing the effort to remind them that they're perfectly capable of doing the right thing. So it has been alleged or stated, I guess, that continuing the imprisonment of the 154 prisoners at Guantanamo Bay is damaging to America's security. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I agree. I think that is the biggest single threat to national security we have, never mind China or anything like that.
No, go ahead.
We know as soldiers, we remember as soldiers that if you want, before the government got us to kill, they always got us to demonize the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing's true of Americans. One of the reasons we've been safe for so long is that we were heralded around the world as being a beacon of hope, you know, being the source of liberty, the source of democracy. And that's for example, why the French gave us a Statue of Liberty is because we were a beacon of hope around the world. And now, if you want to attack America, all you have to do is say Gitmo. So if somebody says, oh, well, you're going to attack America, and you say, well, you really don't want to do that, but it's really a nice country. It's a very democratic country. All they got to do is say, hey, Gitmo, Guantanamo, look what they're doing at Guantanamo. Or if they say believe in democracy, all they got to say is Guantanamo. I mean, this is a place where we are torturing innocent people, where we are holding people without charges, where we are, never mind a speedy trial, we're talking about holding people forever. If I were Al Qaeda, I don't know whether Al Qaeda believes in lobbyists, but if I were Al Qaeda, I would clearly be hiring a lobbyist in Washington D.C. to keep Guantanamo open. It's just so powerful as a way of recruiting new terrorists, as a way of turning people against us. So I think that it is the biggest threat we have to our national security, and we can change it. Our politicians are not, I mean, for crying out loud, they're not doing anything else right. They're not doing that right either. But if we build a strong political base so that they feel they can benefit politically by shutting it, they will.
We are listening to an interview with Elliot Adams, who is an activist who is working for the closure of the Guantanamo base, the prison camp at Guantanamo. And he, this summer, was on a hunger strike in solidarity with the prisoners in Guantanamo and with others. I just wanted to break in here and remind you what we're doing, and also to let you know that you are listening to KTOO FM in Juneau. It's public radio, and you're listening to Peace Talk, which is a program that comes on once a month on Monday evenings to be part of the texture of the general slot called Focus on Community. So let's go back to the interview now. This was recorded on Friday morning, the 15th, and we continue now with the interview of Elliot Adams.
Well, what's so complicated about that? And I'm going to tell you, if you have a place if you don't have a place for somebody, you can send them to my house. I got 75 acres. We grow more than enough food for our family. They can come stay with us. We'll just grow more food. That's all. I've looked at their record. These aren't terrible people. Over half of them have been cleared. You know, we talk about them being the worst of the worst. How can it be the worst of the worst if over half of them have been cleared? And, you know, the other half, they're not sociopaths. You know, anybody who calls them the worst of the worst has never been in a U.S. penitentiary. That's all there is to it. They're nowhere nearly as bad as what we have in our penitentiaries. You know, these are people, you know, if somebody invaded my country, I'd be with them. These are people who are trying to defend their own country from U.S. occupation. They're not sociopaths. They're not nuts. They're not crazy. They're just patriots. So I don't think it's complicated, but I think they can make it complicated if they want to. And that's what we're seeing. But the reason they're making it complicated is because they see some political benefit in it, and that's where we are. We can change the political groundwork so that there is no benefit for them. There is no benefit for them to keep playing this politics. That's why we're creating a social movement. That's why when I went on my 80-day fast, you know, I thought about my ask a long time. And in the end, my ask was that people educate themselves. And I recognized in asking that probably fewer people would do it than if I asked them to write to a senator or something like that. But I also recognize if I ask them to write their senator, they might write their senator and go back to sleep. But if they educate themselves, just like I did, would be so incensed and so angry that they would have to act. And that's what I'm hoping people will do. And you can educate yourself by going to closegitmo.net, which is our website. And it's in. I'm just telling you we are, let's see. We're trying to make that into a better educational tool, so we're really open to people telling us what we can do to make it a better tool.
Mm-hmm. That's just closegitmo.net?
That's correct. Closegitmo.net. There's a closegitmo.com. You can also check on my schedule there. I have room for a blog, but I just haven't had time to be writing a blog about as I do this tour. It's been pretty intense.
Well, of course, we're not going to fault you for that one. part of your efforts during the fast, and as I understand it, this was an 80-day, 300-calorie per day fast, and you ended it during Ramadan in New York. But as I understand it, part of the purpose of the fast was to also show some solidarity with the prisoners at Pelican Bay.
That is correct.
And maybe you could explain that situation real quickly.
Thank you for bringing that up. So in Pelican Bay, they have this bizarre idea that they're trying to deal with gangs. So they had this bizarre idea that it's okay to go to one prisoner and say, look, we want you to turn in your buddies who are involved in gangs. And if you don't turn them in, then we're going to throw you into solitary confinement. Then based on one statement by one prisoner, a prisoner who is under threat of being put in solitary confinement himself, without any judicial review, without any trial, they are thrown into solitary confinement permanently. I mean, people have been in Pelican Bay have been in solitary confinement for 20 years. Recognize that the UN Rapporteur on Torture says that after 10 days, there can be permanent damage to a person, and that therefore any more than 10 days should be considered torture. And we have people who have been in solitary confinement only getting out of their cell for an hour or two a day and not seeing other people for 20 years based on no judicial review, no administrative review, just a single accusation by another prisoner who was under threat of being put in solitary confinement himself. And we believe, and many of the people I've been talking to say, you know, if we can condone torture in Guantanamo Bay, and we can condone torture in the shoes in Pelican Bay, and it is spreading now down into our local prisons, it will spread throughout our society. It will taint us all and sort of become part of our society so that we have a personal reason for ending it, not to mention the fact that it's really a terrible thing or a dumb thing.
And as I understand it, the prisoners at Pelican Bay have been on sort of constant or recurring hunger strikes for several years.
They've done a couple of them. They did a great one. They just did one with 15,000 people. Prisoners that did it. They did one a few years ago where a massive number of prisoners joined them, and they got an agreement from the state that they would rectify some of the issues. Then the state did what they so often do. Can you imagine this? They reneged on their agreement. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? And so they went through another one, and just recently. And, you know, their requests, every one of their core requests was that they fulfill the recommendations of the investigative committee that said, California should do this, this, and this. But California wasn't doing it. But California's not unique in this. This is permeating our society, and we have to stop out of this. Those of us who are in the interest, I know they pulled me in and said to me, look, you know, not me, a whole bunch of us in an auditorium, and said, you guys are the infantry. You guys are the ones who are picking up POWs. We're going to tell you, don't torture the people you pick up. Yeah. There's the Geneva Conventions and all that. That's legal. But the reason we're telling you not to torture them is because it ruins the intelligence if you do it.
Right.
You know, it's not hard. We know it's true, but it's not hard for people to understand. Just think about this macaw dance where the person who's being tortured is just trying to find out what in Christ's name you want them to say, and they'll say it just to stop the process. So they're saying everything. Meanwhile, the torturer is in this bizarre situation where they're torturing to get information which they don't know what it is. But they also, they don't know when they're going to see it, but they also are getting all this false information, which they're trying to sort through and throw out. So they're kind of, because they're getting everything for answers, they can't tell what's real and what isn't. And they're torturing to get more information, but they aren't getting what they think they want, but they don't know what they want. So it's really crazy. And the reality is they're getting every single thing that the person being tortured can think of saying.
Yeah, I mean that's excuse me, the futility of using extreme measures is, I think, is pretty self-evident. Excuse me, but well, as we're going forward now, what are your plans for after your tour and so forth?
Oh, I haven't crossed the bridge of what my next effort is after the tour. I don't think very far ahead. I just sort of backed into that fast. I didn't think that out very well, but it became effective.
Mm-hmm.
I figured, oh my God, what can I do now? And I decided, okay, I'll do a tour. What else can I do? I can talk about it and try to help people move ahead and change the terrain. I believe we can reach this. Look, every single person in this country should be in favor of closing Gitmo. There's the moral reasons. There's the faith reasons, which should affect, you know, the Christians, the Muslims, the Jews, the Jains, the Zoroasters. They all religions are based on forgiveness and love and peace and generosity, all of which this transacts. But I also think that, I mean, the people, let's just say the people who have no faith and have no moral structure. What about the people who are just concerned about money? It costs $2.7 million per person per year to hold them in Guantanamo. $2.7 million times 86 who have been in Guantanamo for about a year and a half now, since they were cleared for release, and they've been cleared two or three times before that. That does not make economic sense. It does not make any kind of sense at all. We have the 80 that are still there that they're talking about. I cannot comprehend this, but they're talking about holding them permanently without trial or charges. But that's kind of un-American, but they're talking about doing that. That's going to cost you $2.7 million for each person. By contrast, you could put them in a U.S. maximum security prison for $90,000. Mm-hmm. So the calculation of how much we would save would be $2.7 million minus $90,000 times 80. But, you know, when you sit down and do the math, you suddenly realize it's not even worth wasting the time subtracting the $90,000. It's so small, it just takes a chump change. You practically pure profit. So that it is just from an economic point of view, it just is crazy. So I think we can bring everybody in on this. As I started to say before, we can win this one. If everybody just does a little bit, we can win this one. And now I think that motivating people to and helping them understand they can create that change, to understand that what the government does defile us. Maybe understanding that the Nuremberg principles basically make us individually punishable for the crimes of our government. I think that we've paved the way to start dealing with abolition of war. And we all know that that's the ultimate. And we've got to abolish war. War is stupid. I love General Eisenhower when he said, "I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, one who has seen its brutality, its futility, and its stupidity."
Yep. Well, actually, that's perhaps a good way to close this off. it's absolutely in line with what we profess as Veterans for Peace. And I just want to tell you that I personally, and I know that there are hundreds of others, who really appreciate your leadership on this and, you know, hope that it starts bearing fruit in the near future.
Well, I wanted to still step in here and say my effectiveness is entirely the work of all of you people. What happened with me, I think my fast was very effective. For example, my senator, had her staff member call me. I didn't call her.
Good.
Call me. Well, that was because so many people wrote her and called her and demanded that she do something. But it illustrates the fact that my fast and my work is nothing. It's the work of all of you, and I just play a role to help you, help other people move forward and engage this issue and work on it. But it is entirely your work and the work of your listeners which makes a difference. And I appreciate all that they've done.
Well, okay. After that mutual admiration, I'm wondering, are you going to be in Asheville in late July for the VFP annual convention?
Most likely. I haven't made any specific plans about that, but I seem to have made all the recent ones.
it would be great to hear a report there. In fact, maybe we could have a little celebration to celebrate the closure of Gitmo.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't that be nice?
We could have a celebration, the fact that the Senate had a hearing on closing Gitmo, and that was chaired by a Democrat. And it's not going to make any difference in the long run, but it does show that for the first time in 11 years, enough Democrats thought that it was politically expeditious important to have their name officially on the record for closing Gitmo. Mm-hmm. And that was the result of our work.
Yep. Well, we got to keep it up until it bears the fruit we need.
That's right.
So that was the conclusion of our interview with Elliot Adams. We leave from that interview with the definite thought that momentum in working on the closure of Gitmo is important. Words that resonate are, don't call your senators once, call them every day to keep it up. And we can eventually turn this thing around and free our country from the stain of Gitmo and liberate our country from the pain that Gitmo causes others and thereby easing our own. And as we come up on Thanksgiving, it's probably a great time to recommit ourselves to the things for which we are thankful. And among those are our system of justice. And we think about that as we look at Goose Creek Prison here in Alaska, the Pelican Bay Prison in California, and most shameful of all, the Guantanamo Bay prison facility operated by our government. So, Think about those on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day, if that is, if you're not at Walmart shopping, because I understand that Walmart and several other huge stores are not letting their employees take a day off. But that's a different subject for a different time. Well, we're not at 8 o'clock yet. We will be in about 15 minutes. And to get us there, I'd like to play some songs from the VFP local album CD called Wounded Dove. I'm sorry, this came out several years ago. And we periodically play songs from that CD here on our program. First one this evening is going to be a song by Tony Tengs, who wrote the words, along with Mr. McDonald, and is played by himself, and he sings the vocals, and he's accompanied by Pat Henry on the mandolin. And it goes, "Peace is a good idea. It's the best one yet. But you're never going to find it on your TV set. Never mind those who wishes, never mind those wishes upon a star. Dream without actions won't get us far." Here is One Thing I Know by Tony Tengs.
One thing I know, and I know it well, peace doesn't come from a wishing well. It doesn't come from a prayer or a lighted candle. To open a door, we gotta turn the handle. We gotta lift a finger to make a change come around. We gotta raise our voice. We gotta make a sound. One thing I know, and I know it well. Doesn't come from a wishing well. Doesn't come from faith neath a church's steeple. It comes from connecting with a thousand people. Raise it loud and strong. Give the world another choice. Sing a brand new song. Your liberty in your pocket. You can make it shine throughout the night. When it comes to freedom, you gotta rock it. You gotta hold it to the light. Peace is a good idea. It's the best one yet. But you're never gonna find it in your TV set. Never mind those wishes on some star. Dreams without action won't get us far. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well. one thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing well. One thing I know, and I know it well. Peace doesn't come from a wishing, from a wishing.
One Thing I Know by Tony Tengs and Mr. McDowell. Words and music by Tengs, and Tony was playing the guitar and singing, and the mandolin background was our good friend Pat Henry. That's something to think about. The next one that we're going to play this evening is called Peace Is Not a Four-Letter Word. It's sung by Jane Rudenberg. Was composed by Ed Hine, who was a former member of our community and a former member of Veterans for Peace here in Juneau. Jane Rudenberg is singing and playing the guitar, and once again, Pat Henry is filling in on the mandolin. This one goes, "We vets are the people familiar with war. We're telling our leaders we don't want no more. We say no to killing and torture and such. We only want peace. Is that asking too much?" Peace is not a four-letter word, sung by Jane Rudenberg.
When did we
Peace is not a four-letter word by Ed Hein, performed by Jane Rudenberg. I think our last song this evening, I'm sure it'll bring us up to pretty much the end of the program, is one known as Rich Man's War by a group called Know When to Quit, which involves Steve Earle as the words and the music, the composer of this piece, Terry Hoskinson on vocals and playing the guitar, Frederick Hoskinson playing the auto harp, Glenn Hoskinson responsible for vocals. And so this is a gift to us from the Hoskinson family. Rich Man's War, it's called. Has Jimmy joined the army because he had no place to go? There ain't nobody hiring around here. All the jobs went down to Mexico. Let's go ahead and listen to this, and then we will bring the program to a close.
Jimmy joined the army 'cause he had no place to go. Ain't nobody hiring round here since all the jobs went down to Mexico. Reckon that he'd learn himself a trade, maybe see the world, move to the city someday and marry a black-haired girl. Somebody somewhere had another plan. Now he's got a rifle in his hand, rolling into Baghdad, wondering how he got that far. Just another poor boy off to fight a rich man's war. Bobby had an eagle and a flag tattooed on his arm, red, white, and blue to the bone when he landed in Kandahar. Left behind a pretty young wife and a baby girl.
This is Phil Smith thanking you for joining us this evening and listening to our interview with Elliot Adams and urging you to contact our elected representatives with respect to the concept of closing Gitmo as soon as possible. I'd like to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving and remind you to wage peace.